Well, good morning, everybody. It'd be good if you could keep those Bibles open so we can look at the passage together. The passage for today, as it says, John 19, verses 1 to 16, is entitled, Behold Your King. And the question I would like us to consider today is, how would your life look different if you wanted to be like Jesus? How would your life look different if you wanted to be like Jesus? Today, tomorrow, the week ahead. That is, rather than like the powers that be, rather than like the rest of the world, how would your life look different if you wanted to be like Jesus? You might think, sitting in church here this morning, well, yeah, I'm a Christian and I believe in Jesus. Why would my life be any different? But you know, it's so easy when you're sat in the pews surrounded by Christians, isn't it? There's a story about a bandit called Jorge who kept crossing the border from Mexico into the US and robbing the banks. And he accrued a massive amount of money, gold, and jewelry. The US sent a marshal to arrest him, but he couldn't speak Spanish. So they sent a vicar with him who could translate for him. Well, they made their way into Mexico, and after several months they found Jorge. He was in a bar having a drink, and the marshal and the vicar walked in and walked up behind Jorge, and the marshal put the gun at the back of Jorge's head, and he said to the vicar, can you translate for me? He said, you are Jorge, you are the wanted bandit, and we're going to arrest you and take you back to the US. And the vicar translated into Spanish to Jorge, and Jorge said, it's a fair cop, you've taken me, take me away. And the vicar translated back to the marshal. But the marshal said, before we do that, we want all the money, all the gold and all the jewelry that you stole returned. The vicar translated to Jorge. Jorge said, no, I will never give it up. The vicar translated back to the marshal. Marshal pointed the gun even harder in the back of his head. He said, if you don't tell us where the money is, I will shoot you. The vicar told Jorge the bad news. So Jorge said, okay, if you go out of the town, you've come across a crossroads. Turn left, go about a mile, there's a little shack underneath the floorboards. And millions of dollars, huge amount of gold and lots of diamonds. You will be a very rich man. The vicar thought for a second, then turned to the marshal and said, Jorge says, go ahead and shoot. It's easy when we're sat here to believe and trust in Jesus and say we follow him as our king. But when we go out there on a Monday, on a Tuesday, how hard does it get? We've come to the final part of Jesus' trial. And the first thing I want us to look at from this passage is the humiliation of Jesus, verses 1 to 3. It says, then Pilate took Jesus and flogged him, and the soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head and arrayed him in a purple robe. They came up to him saying, Hail, King of the Jews, and struck him with their hands. The flogging was painful and shameful, but the mockery was particularly cruel. Dressing him up like a king in a royal purple robe, wearing the crown of thorns and saying, Hail the King. They're not bowing to him, they're hitting him. What a sorry sight. The teacher, the miracle worker, who had seemed so impressive as he rode on that donkey into Jerusalem just a couple of days earlier, now become a laughingstock. He looks ridiculous. He is humiliated. See, what Pilate understood was that if Jesus is humiliated, then Jesus' people are humiliated. Also, if Jesus is made a laughingstock, then so are his people, his followers. Yes, it's going to be different when Jesus returns, but in this world, Jesus' people have a king who was humbled, who was mocked and beaten. And that means his followers today are still tarred with the same brush. Teenagers understand instinctively. They respond to peer pressure by trying to look cool. And the last thing they want is for their friends to meet their parents. I had a year seven parents evening last week on a Wednesday, and how embarrassed some of my nicest students were just to be seen with their parents. Couldn't believe it. How embarrassing is that? Parents who would let the side down and destroy their credibility. But Jesus shows that to be the greatest of all, you must become the least of all. Perhaps it is embarrassing to be associated with Jesus at times. He came as a humiliated king, and in this world he expects to lead humiliated people, and that Christians will always experience rejection. But it's a worrying sign when our Christianity becomes respectable in the eyes of society. It becomes a worrying sign when our church tries to fit in with society today. There might be things about Christians which should earn the begrudging respect of others, but that should always be in the context where more usually Christians are mocked for saying they're a Christian. As St. Paul said, the word of the cross is folly to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. For those of us with respectable jobs and respectable homes, we may think that a respectable Christianity is what we need, but it's not the sort of Christianity Jesus taught about. It was not the sort of saviour he was. If we were to cling to our respectability a whole lot less and follow Jesus' example a whole lot more, then perhaps we would find ourselves in the firing line from time to time. The humiliated people of a humiliated king should be happy when that happens. Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. Do we believe that this morning? If God's anointed king is mocked, then we, his followers, should count it an honour to be tarred with the same brush. So Jesus is our humiliated king. The second thing we notice about the passage is the pride of Pilate. And this is found in verses 4 to 14. You have to ask yourself, why does Pilate have Jesus flogged? Well, Pilate said, if we look a little bit earlier, last week we looked at this, in chapter 18, verse 38, I find no guilt in him. Jesus is innocent. So why have him flogged? The chief priest said Jesus should be executed, but Pilate says Jesus has done nothing wrong. So verse 39 of chapter 18, Pilate asked the Jewish leaders, do you want me to release the king of the Jews? They replied in verse 40, no, not him. Then we come to today's passage, chapter 19, verse 1. Pilate took Jesus and had him flogged. Why? Probably as a compromise. They want Jesus killed, but Pilate finds Jesus innocent. So maybe he thinks that if Jesus is flogged, well, they'll be satisfied with that and let the matter drop. But I think there's more going on in this passage than that. Pilate doesn't care much about justice. Punishing an innocent man is no big deal to Pilate. When we look at this passage, we think it's all about Jesus. But to Pilate, Jesus is irrelevant. This is all about the chief priests and Pilate. Put yourself in Pilate's shoes for a moment. Normally you live in the grandeur of Caesarea. But because of these Jews and that Passover festival, you have to go up to Jerusalem to maintain some Roman law and order. You don't care about them. You've just got to go and show who's boss. So you go there, and the Jewish leaders bring you some random prisoner. We go back to chapter 18, verse 29. So Pilate went outside to them and said, "What accusations do you bring against this man?" They answered him, "If this man were not doing evil, we would not have delivered him over to you." Now, if you're Pilate, you're insulted. These chief priests are just using you. They're saying that they found him guilty and are treating you, the Roman governor, like some menial civil servant who can just rubber stamp their verdict. So you think to yourself, "I'm not going to let these people push me around. I'll show them who's in charge." So you hold a trial. You find Jesus innocent. And then what do? You try and set Jesus free. But in a way that will put those chief priests back into their place. We can see that by the way he keeps insulting the chief priests through this passage. He said to them halfway through chapter 18, verse 39, "Do you want me to release the King of the Jews?" King of the Jews. That's Pilate's phrase. That's not the chief priest's phrase. They hate Jesus and want him killed. He's not their king. It's rude to say that to them. But he's going to keep playing upon it to rub it in their faces. He says it again in chapter 19, verse 14. He says, "Behold your king." Pilate does it again in chapter 19 when we get to the crucifixion. It says, Pilate also wrote an inscription and put it on the cross. It read, "Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews." So the chief priests of the Jews said to Pilate, do not write "the King of the Jews," but rather, "This man said, I am King of the Jews." Pilate answered in verse 22, "What I have written, I have written." Pilate won't change the sign because he's doing it deliberately. He wants to annoy them, to put them back in their place. And that's why Jesus was flogged, and the soldiers dressed Jesus up like a king to mock him. Pilate doesn't hide this, but paraded this in front of the chief priests. Let's look again at verse 4. Pilate went out again and said to them, "See, I am bringing him out to you, that you may know that I find no guilt in him." So Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. Pilate said to them, "Behold the man." What a sight Jesus must have been, battered and bleeding, dressed like a pantomime king. Ludicrous and pathetic. And Pilate rubs their noses in it by saying, "Behold the man." He is saying to the chief priests, "Do you mean to say that this pathetic man might be your Messiah?" Well, at least you think they would let the matter drop. But no, in verse 6, when the chief priests and the officers saw him, they cried out, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" See, Jesus is not their king. They consider him a troublemaker. They are determined that he must die. But now we see a power struggle develop. Pilate's idea was that they would accept the flogging and call it quits. Instead, they are still insisting that Jesus be killed. But Pilate has twice now declared him innocent. But then in verse 6, it says, Pilate said to them, "Take him yourselves and crucify him, for I find no guilt in him." This is the third time Pilate has insisted there is no basis for a charge against Jesus. What don't they understand? This guy is not guilty. Saying, "Take him yourselves and crucify him," is intended to put them back in their place. We saw last week that they have no power to execute people. Only the Romans could do that. But Pilate is not going to be steamrolled by these annoying chief priests. He finds Jesus innocent, And if they don't like it, tough. Now, John, writing this gospel, wants us to realize that the words spoken here about Jesus are actually true. For Jesus is the King of the Jews. Jesus is the promised Messiah in the Old Testament. Pilate says, "Here is the man," and that is who Jesus is. The man who has come, the Word made flesh. And I would like to ask us this morning, how often do we let our pride get in the way of what is right? When do we put our image and our reputation first at the expense of our faith? We can see that this passage is about Jesus, but it's also telling us about how pride can drive people to be less than gracious. So we've looked at the humiliation of Jesus and the pride of Pilate. Finally, the last point, who is our king? Is it Jesus or is it Caesar? Who is our king? And we're going to be looking through verses 7 to 16. We might say, sitting here this morning, of course it's Jesus. Jesus is our king. But do we mean it? Do we, Monday to Friday, Monday to Saturday, as we're working out in the world, put our money where our mouth is? Or are we just playing lip service this morning? Who is our king? The chief priests don't want to back down, so they try to explain why they are so adamant that Jesus must die. Let's look again at verse 7. The Jews answered him, "We have a law, and according to that law, he ought to die because he has made himself the Son of God." Well, I don't know what response they expected from Pilate, but I don't think they get it. Instead of agreeing with them, Pilate becomes afraid. He's thinking, have I just had some sort of God mocked and flogged? So verse 8, it says, when Pilate heard this statement, he was even more afraid. He entered his headquarters again and said to Jesus, "Where are you from?" But Jesus gave him no answer. So Pilate said to him, "Will you not speak to me? Do you not know that I have authority to release you and authority to crucify you?" The same attitude again. Don't mess with me. I'm the one in charge around here. But Jesus' reply casts a whole new light on what's going on here. Verse 11, Jesus answered him, "You would have no authority over me at all unless it had been given you from above." He didn't say given you from the west, from the east, from the south, from the north. No, authority from above. It's not man's authority he's talking about. And that's true in general. God gives authority and power to rulers, to governments, to your boss. But Jesus means something much more specific here. He says, "You would have no power over me," meaning I would not have been brought to you captive, and you would not be exercising the power of judgment over me, if it were not given you from above. If God had not decreed that it should be so. Jesus says there is a sovereign God, and this sovereign God has determined that the Son of God should come to earth and stand trial and be crucified for the sins of others. Jesus should be standing in the judgment, in judgment over Pilate. And the only reason Pilate has temporary power over Jesus is because God the Father planned it that way. And God the Son has humbled himself in obedience. So Jesus continues in verse 11, "Therefore he who delivered me over to you has the greater sin." See, Pilate hadn't got up that morning planning to crucify the Son of God. He just got up and got caught up in it all. Jesus, the innocent prisoner who will one day judge the world, shows Pilate where the blame lies. It lies with Caiaphas, the high priest who handed Jesus over to Pilate and who is actively seeking Jesus' death. Not that Pilate is blameless, he must take responsibility for his rejection of Jesus. He's guilty of that sin. But to those whom Jesus came and did not recognize him, they committed the most serious offense. The chief priests lead the Jewish nation as God's people. They should have recognized Jesus for who he was, and they didn't. They let their pride get in the way. So here, Jesus is defining sin according to our treatment of him. And that's why we must identify with him rather than against him. And we do that believing, as he did, that God is sovereign in our lives. The humiliation of Jesus is not the whole plan, but is part of the bigger story. See, Jesus went to the cross bearing our shame, carrying our guilt. He rose from the dead, victorious over Satan, giving his people new birth into a living hope, the promise of life with him in glory forever. That was the full plan of God from before the creation of the world, and he set this in motion. Yet this morning, if we don't realize that, we don't realize that God is sovereign over all the details of our lives, we will not be willing to suffer disgrace for the sake of Christ. The fact that God was in control then means that he is in control now. Finally, let's look at verses 12 to 16. It seemed that Jesus' words have touched a nerve with Pilate. Verse 12, from then on, Pilate sought to release him. Pilate had told Jesus he had the power to do this, so now surely it will happen. But the chief priests know Pilate's weak spot. Isn't it funny how the devil knows our weak spots? What was Pilate's weak spot? It goes on to say, but the Jews cried out, if you release this man, you are not Caesar's friend. Everyone who makes himself a king opposes Caesar. They're no longer making accusations against Jesus because that was getting them nowhere. Now they're just manipulating the judge, Pilate. They're asking Pilate to choose between saving Jesus and serving Caesar. Jesus or Caesar? Which will it be, Pilate? But he gets the message because he can't afford to upset the boss. He can't afford to upset Caesar. So verse 13, so when Pilate heard these words, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judgment seat. Now it was the day of preparation of the Passover. It was about the sixth hour, and he said to the Jews, behold your king. They cried out, away with him, crucify him. Pilate doesn't want to lose face and makes one last attempt. Pilate said to them, shall I crucify your king? The chief priest answered, we have no king but Caesar. So he delivered him over to them to be crucified. And so Pilate lost his fight with the chief priests. In the end, they knew how to force his hand. But at the same time, John wants us to see how he inadvertently pushed them into the most remarkable admission. How he pushed the chief priests into that statement. We have no king but Caesar. They have made the same choice between Jesus and Caesar. They could have said, we have no king but the Lord God. That was their job. But that would have got them into trouble with the Romans. They acted out of self-interest. How often do we act out of self-interest when put under pressure about our faith? They do what it takes to maintain themselves, to maintain their respectable position. And if that means giving lip service to Caesar, then so be it. They knew what they were doing. In their hearts, they were resolutely opposed to Jesus and all that he stood for. They were determined to have him killed and to be rid of him because their loyalty was to this world. And there's a choice we all have between choosing Jesus or Caesar. Jesus is no threat to Caesar since his kingdom is not of this world. But on a deeper level, it is the fundamental choice we all must make this morning. Is our loyalty to Caesar, to the things of this world, to the powers and authorities that we can see, and to the structures and ideals of our human society that force us to do things that we think are right? Or is our loyalty to Christ, to the one humiliated, despised, and rejected by this world? See, his kingdom is spiritual. His rule is invisible. And the answer to that question will determine how we live day by day in this world. As Christians, we need to remember that we're not citizens of this world trying to make our way to heaven. We are citizens of heaven making our way through this world. But one day, Jesus will come in glory, and every knee shall bow, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. So let me close with that question from the start. How would your life look different if you wanted to be like Jesus today? Amen.